clear. Oh, it comes off Hughes. A wee bit better. It is McHugh!
Hello and welcome to the NFC podcast. Tonight, myself, Jay and Buster, will look back in our last three games. Look forward to, can we look forward to it, the last five games of the season? And we'll see what else takes a fancy over the next three quarters of an hour or so. Guys, welcome along.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Okay, so obviously today we lost out to Rangers, but we've had three games in the last week and we've not went over one of them. It all started so well, Jay, a 3-0 victory over St Johnstone. A game that perhaps wasn't really that good for about 70 minutes or so, but we ended it very strongly. Three great goals and a very emphatic win against a team that are traditionally a very difficult opponent.
Yeah, I think that kind of sums it up. I thought St Johnstone came clearly for the draw. Or possibly to maybe, you know, nick a winner on the counter-attack. They sat in and they weren't really interested in playing much football. They actually reminded me of us, perhaps, in the first half of the season. You know, it was all about being physical, hard to break down. Murray Davison just running about fouling and moaning. But, you know, obviously we got there in the end. I thought, particularly in the first half, we controlled possession without really doing anything with it. Second half, actually, St Johnstone probably started a little bit brighter, but... You know, I think maybe 3-0 might have flattered us a little bit, but I think we were definitely, you know, worthy winners. And, you know, it's very rare, perhaps, that we get to see a Motherwell performance that results in quite an emphatic scoreline. Is that these days, particularly against, you know, a team that is regularly challenging for that top six and a team that we are now going to be fighting out for seventh place. So I think it's one of those games, you know, it feels like a lifetime ago now, having played another two games since, but it was certainly... You know, a game that you left with a bit of spring in the step and really impressed by what we'd seen. And obviously, it was great to see Elliot Freer got off the bench and score. It was great to see Chris Cadden make his return. Turnbull, obviously, adding another goal. And then, of course, you know, the rarity of Richard Tate goal. So I think that evening was certainly a good one. And it was a worthy, worthy win at the time.
And Buster, a big part of the game, obviously, was Mark Gillespie's first half penalty save. A great stop and something he's become quite accustomed to, I guess. He made a great save in the first half against St Johnstone in the last meeting between the sides as well.
Yeah, at the time, I think we were trying to work out how many it was he'd faced and many he'd saved. And I believe it was 3 out of 4 he'd actually saved. And as you say, you know, that goes in, it's a different game. I didn't really think St Johnstone were up to much, you know, last week, whenever it was. But as mentioned as well, it was really tight until basically we brought on Freer and Cadden. Cadden came back with a bang, to be fair. I thought he was great. Freer obviously made massive impact as well. And 3-0 maybe flattered us a bit, as you said. But, you know, I think we deserve to win that day.
And then we move on to the midweek game against Aberdeen. It was a very difficult game and a difficult place to go to as well, of course. We go a goal behind quite early on. Good response through Jake Hasty's equaliser. Go behind in unfortunate circumstances. That was following injury to Mark Gillespie and Rowan Ferguson taking his place between the sticks. Now McGinn scores an injury time to wrap up a 3-1 victory for Aberdeen. Jay, weren't a million miles off the pace again. But for me, over the 90 minutes, I felt we gave Aberdeen, a pretty average Aberdeen side, a bit too much respect.
Possibly. I didn't maybe get that impression. I just felt it was one of those days where our more creative players were just a little bit off the boil. I thought both wingers, both Hasty and Aribe, didn't really do much. I thought even the likes of Turnbull in the middle of the park kind of struggled to really create anything. And it's you know, it just shows you how vastly different we are post-Hogmanay than we were before it, because, you know, we're now a team that when you go to someone like Pittodrie and your more creative players aren't able to get involved, then we go on to really, really struggle, which is obviously, you know, a million miles away from where we were before Hogman A, where, you know, you couldn't spot a creative player in a Motherwell shirt. So I think we perhaps just struggled a little bit to really make anything happen. You know, the only two really bits of creativity or good play that we had that I can really remember was, you know, Richard Tate's phenomenal pass through for Jake Hasty's goal, and then a lovely ball for Carroll McHugh, you know, that Grimshaw perhaps had a little bit more time to maybe take it out there, you know, went for that looping header. And of course, you know, you go a goal down very early on from what was a clear cross. And then, of course, Aberdeen then take the lead again with another really, you know, jammy goal. So, I mean, I suppose it could be maybe a wee bit harder to get back into the game when things are kind of perceived to be going against you. But I don't think it was a particularly poor performance. I think it was just one of those ones where, you know, the more creative guys perhaps just didn't get going. We struggled to maybe make anything happen and maybe got a little bit frustrated as the game went on. But again, we need to keep it in context. Although it was a must-win game in terms of our top six ambitions, it's still a phenomenally difficult place to go. I know a lot of Aberdeen fans actually seemed a little bit pessimistic about the game, you know, based on their current form and how they've been performing in the league. But I think, you know, on paper, you look at some of the players they have, particularly somebody like Niall McGinn, who obviously got both goals. I mean, he's set, although his first one was a little bit fortuitous with the ball coming off Aldred, I think the second one is just a phenomenal goal. You know, Aberdeen still have many, many players that would absolutely walk into our team. So, you know, I think it was a poor result. It wasn't a result that we can be pleased with by any means. And it did, of course, scupper any hope we had of the top six, regardless that, you know, Hibs obviously did enough anyway. But I thought the performance wasn't, you know, terrible. I thought we went to Pittodrie, we gave a reasonable account of ourselves. We just struggled to really create anything. And at the end of the day, we are now the kind of side that when we score goals, it's going to come from our more creative players. You know, Curtis Main doesn't score goals. So we have guys who you really need, somebody like Turnbull or Hasty or Uribe, to be on top form if you're going to score goals. And unfortunately, it was just one of those nights where I don't think any of those players really shone.
I would say that it was a stretch, Buster, that Aberdeen are anything more than this season, particularly a bang average side. But I get exactly what Jay means. We went to a difficult place. We lost the game. But in the grander scheme of things, I guess it was a game that confirmed that we wouldn't make the top six. Given the first half of the season, though, we can't be overly disappointed at that, surely.
But yeah, that's maybe the point that I was going to make, that, you know, given, as you say, what new year we would have been content with a decent revival, I suppose, and not being relegated to marginally is maybe pushing it, but to miss out on the top six with two games to go, a game to go, whatever it was, just shows you how far we have come. You know, guys who started to shine, Turnbull, Hasty, Aribi, when he's, you know, on song, can be a very difficult person to deal with as well for fullbacks. But yeah, I think that it's unfortunate that, you know, we perhaps gave it up so easily. But, you know, if you to look at our fixtures, granted, and where we were going back a month or two, you know, we've done reasonably well to get as far as we did.
And what about your take on the kind of performance from Jake Hasty? A guy that Jay alluded hasn't been quite on it in the last couple of weeks. I even would say in the St. Johnstone game, he wasn't at the level we saw him in his first six or seven games where he broke through to the team. Did we just expect this dip, I guess? Because, let's be honest, he's broken through after a loan spell at Alloa. He wasn't deemed good enough to go straight into our first team at the start of the season, and that was the reason he was loaned out. It was kind of inevitable, wasn't it?
I'll go. Again, as you say, even when he came back, he, as far as I'm aware, was going to be the, you know, in about the bench, basically, you know, getting 20, 30 minutes here and there. But I think Elliot Freer picked up a knock a couple of days before the first game when he was back. And he hit the ground running, to be fair. He came in all guns blazing. looked as if he's got, it looks as if he's got a great talent, looks as if he's got a fair bit of potential. Whether or not he goes on to, you know, fulfil that potential, it's up to him, I suppose. But I think if you want to be critical of him, I think that after a few games where people picked up in his game, considering he's a left-footed player who's playing in the right wing, after a few games where people realised, you know, he'll run at you and he'll cut inside and have a shot, I think a couple of teams sussed that pretty easily and nullified them pretty easily. So I think it'd be, and again, I don't know where else he can play or where else he would play, but I think it'd be beneficial to maybe, if he's going to stay with us, if we're going to keep him, if he's going to play, you know, put him on the left for a bit, let him go to the byline, see if he can put in a cross. You know, if he can play behind a forward, so to speak. You know, I know David Turnbull's in there, and David Turnbull's just about the best football player in the world, so we're not going to oust him. But you know, if he can play in another position, it might be wise to give him a go somewhere else when he is maybe not getting as much luck on his so far preferred role of cutting in on his left foot. But it'll be interesting to see, as I say, how he gets on between now and the end of the season, where he ends up or if he stays, and how he develops going forward, I suppose.
And that kind of brings us on quite nicely, Jay. Obviously, a lot of the chat in the previous podcast we've had is Jake Hasty to Rangers. Many journalists in the mainstream media, and particular the Red Tops, reporting it was a done deal. That clearly is not the case. It has now been confirmed that Jake Hasty won't be going to Rangers. I think there is a feeling about the supporters and possibly a vibe coming from the club that it's quite unlikely that Jake Hasty will be playing his football at Fir Park come the start of the 2019-2020 season. But the speculation and I guess uncertainty, that is a difficult thing to deal with, particularly for a guy of a young age with very limited first-team experience.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, obviously, it's very difficult to, you know, judge a player's mentality. It might be water off a duck's back. It might, you know, it might affect.
Like a duck's back as well.
it's difficult to, it's really difficult to tell, you know, particularly because he had such a, you know, it almost feels as though he's only just came into the first team. It's not even a player that you've kind of seen develop in the first team, so you have a bit of a feel for the mentality of the player. He's literally came into the team and within weeks exploded, and it's just went absolutely sky high. So I don't know, you know, how he deals with that. I think today, in particular, it felt a little bit like he was maybe trying a bit too hard. You know, I think that's perhaps a little bit natural. Not only is it on TV, and there is obviously a future contract perhaps elsewhere to play for, but it's also against the team that he's been heavily linked with, and you know, you've got all that kind of sideshow as well. So I did feel today that he was maybe trying a little bit too hard. I don't know whether that's, you know, a problem with mentality or whether it's just perhaps human nature. I think anybody in that position would perhaps be guilty of that. But I think overall, I think he's shown to have, you know, a good mentality. I think even when things were exploding for him and he was being linked for Rangers, although the last couple of weeks it has felt like he's went off the boil and he's struggled to kind of deal with teams getting their head around how he plays and doubling up on him. I think, you know, when he was still doing really well and still scoring goals, which we have to remember, you know, he scored on Wednesday again as well. I think he's still been chipping in and doing well during all the links to Rangers, because let's not forget that the Rangers part has been rumbling on for weeks. So it's not as though the minute that happened, he suddenly went quiet. He was still doing well. He was still playing well. So yeah, there might be a little bit to do with mentality. I think there's probably a large bit to do with the fact that what we experienced was a really unexpected purple patch for Jake Hasty. That's not necessarily a criticism on him or his ability. He still, you know, may go on to recapture that form, but I think that it's very easy as a football fan to see a player come into your club, do really well for, you know, whether it's a young player or a new signing, do really well for 3 or 4 weeks, and then automatically assume that's the norm. You know, that's the benchmark, rather than some sort of purple patch. So, you know, I think we need to accept that Jake Hasty isn't perhaps the player that he was, you know, or that we believed he might be when he first exploded onto the scene. And perhaps that was just a really fortuitous couple of weeks for him. You know, everything went right because, as you mentioned yourself, you know, this was a guy who did all right at Alloa. You know, guys who do all right at Alloa don't turn out to be the top, top class player that he was those first couple of weeks. So I think, you know, it's just one of those situations where I think, you know, the sort of planets have aligned and a lot of ingredients have been thrown in to give him this phenomenal few weeks, particularly, you know, the opposition we were playing as well. Although we were in a fantastic run, I think we need to acknowledge that a lot of the games we were playing, you know, it was against the kind of teams that you would be hoping to beat anyway. And obviously Jake Hasty's arrival from practically nowhere caught these teams out. So I've still got a lot of, you know, confidence and faith in Jake Hasty's ability as a player. But I think what we're experiencing now is perhaps the sort of the real Jake Hasty, if you like, a player who, you know, has got power, has got pace, has got ability, but will struggle in games, A, because he's a winger, B, because he's young, and C, because once players know and managers know who he is, it's their job to combat that. And I think we've seen that, you know, today, Aberdeen, Hibs, you know, the kind of the better teams, I think, have really sussed him out very, very quickly and have put measures in place. And it's the challenge is for Jake Hasty to overcome that. And as Buster says, you know, is there a way to kind of maybe, I know he ended or you know, ended his game today playing up front. You know, whether that's something that might, you know, if he was to stay next season, would that happen? It remains to be seen. But I think he's still a very, very good player. But I think what we've experienced the last few weeks is perhaps the reality rather than that kind of purple patch we saw. So it'll be interesting to see what happens between now and the end of the season because there does seem to be a lot of links elsewhere. Whether, you know, those are tangible, or whether that's, you know, concrete links or whether that's just scouts that are watching him. You know, it'll be interesting to see where we are in the summer, because if he doesn't recapture the form that he did in that purple patch, then, you know, as we all know, teams these days have lists of targets, they have lists of priorities and players they want to go out and sign. And, you know, as we saw with Rangers, you can kind of go from being a number one target or someone that apparently is a done deal to, you know, being dismissed very, very quickly. So Jake Hasty, if he does want to, you know, secure a big, big move, he still has a lot of work to do between now and the end of the season.
Bastard, there was a few interesting points through what you just said there. But for me, I think there was a real disappointment amongst the greater Motherwell support that Jake Hasty was perhaps looking to move on and progress his career at Rangers, a club that we know don't traditionally develop young players. There was a lot of other options in his position at the same time as well. Would it be the case now that we're slightly less arsed, I guess, if Jake Hasty was to move on to, for talking's sake, to go down south to a Bolton or a Wigan or something like that? Would it be as much of a loss as perhaps we thought it was when he was going to Rangers?
Well, if you look at our team, first of all, before we consider where Jake Hasty's future is going to be, our team, the way we set up just now in these wing positions, we've got a guy on loan for Notts Forest, Elliot Freer, who's out of contract. We've got Jake Hasty, who's out of contract. Chris Cadden, who's out of contract. Who am I missing? There must be other guys that can play these positions. But even then, we've got four guys who probably are the front runners for these two wings who possibly won't be here next season. So, I don't know if it makes us less arsed if he goes or not. Like you said, though, myself, rightly or wrongly, I did not want him to go to Rangers. I wouldn't have wanted him to go to Celtic, just in case MD's paranoid for that sort of thing either. But I wouldn't have wanted him to go to any of these two teams because of the, as you say, the limited opportunities he'd probably have. If you look at the boy Morgan, who went for St Mirren to Celtic, he's now on loan at Sunderland, I think it is. You know, he's fair dues. He's got into the Scotland team recently and well played him, but he's not getting a chance at Celtic. I don't think Hasty to Rangers would have led him to having much first-team football either. So I definitely didn't want him to go there. If you look at our needs, thinking, you know, we'll possibly set up in a similar way, you know, I would love him to stay. There's been a lot of questions. I've heard a lot of people, you know, going up and doing the trains and pubs after games and stuff, saying maybe a bit like what Jay was hinting at. You know, he's maybe not that good, and he's maybe just had this. I don't mean that good. I mean, you know, he's maybe not as good as we thought he was, and he's maybe just had that massive purple patch. You know, and he's maybe going to make the best of it, quite rightly so, for himself. But I think that he's very useful, especially for a Motherwell. You know, I don't know who's looking at him. I don't know. I know there was talk of an American team, but I don't know anything really about the English or the American teams, or whether or not if he went to a step up, what would be considered a step up for us, to like a Hibs or a Hearts. You know, I don't know how. I think a step up, if he was stepping up, I think maybe Hibs, Hearts, maybe Aberdeen would be a good place for him to go, where he's got a better chance of getting game time. But in all honesty, when you look at our team, our wingers at the moment, I think that we kind of really need to hold on to him. You know, he's in our team at the moment. He's done really well in the games he's played. If you look at his goals to games ratio, it's fantastic. So I think that we would need to keep hold of him. So to say that I'm no arsed if he leaves is a bit of an overstatement, but I'm definitely delighted that he won't be going to Rangers.
And Rangers, there's quite a few points that are just bringing me on quite nicely, making my job very easy here. But Rangers today were the opposition at Fir Park, and it was a disappointing afternoon. I think that has to be said first and foremost. Again, that we started quite well. We lost the first goal. We responded quite well. We made errors for the second goal. Again, we responded fairly well after that. Started the second half, I would say the brighter of the two sides. Lost a goal again through our own errors, and 3-0, the game's done. That's pretty much the case. And there wasn't much between the sides. I would say that our game against St Johnston last Saturday certainly wasn't a 3-0 game. And perhaps today's game wasn't really a 3-0 game either.
I suppose, overall, on balance, no, I would probably agree with that. I think, you know, it's a really frustrating game. I think we're perfectly used to, you know, getting beat by a team like Rangers. We have all went through, as Motherwell fans, numerous horsings off of, you know, a team like Rangers. But to do it in the way we did today, I thought was particularly frustrating, because I thought we shone in flashes, you know, what we're all about. I thought, you know, if the guys at the Motherwell media team are looking to put together the story of the match, they could probably make us look, you know, quite good. You know, Aribe had a couple of nice wee bits where he was going past Rangers players. You know, Hasty got in behind a couple of times. Turnbull had a couple of good wee touches, as did Gordon. You know, we at times threatened to do something, and it just never quite came off. And I think that's quite disappointing, you know, to go and just play shit. And just be beaten by a far better side or something like that. You can kind of just dust yourself down and move on. But I think it was quite frustrating, because I did think that there was something just lacking. Whether, you know, at times it was the final pass, you know, like Hasty going through and just, you know, mishitting what should have been an easy layoff to Main. You know, Hasty again, perhaps a couple of weeks ago, would have buried that one where he found himself in behind. And just, you know, took too long on it. I think it was just one of those, a very frustrating game. And of course, when you gift Rangers the chances that we did, you've got no chance. That's as simple as that. It's, you know, we all know, we talk about it for weeks on end before these games, and the manager talks about it in press conferences about how if you want to get a result against the likes of Rangers and Celtic, even this Rangers, you know, there is no fear factor anymore. It's they're a pale imitation of you know, their former existence, and they're relatively mediocre. I wasn't impressed by Rangers today in the slightest. But when you gift guys, you know, they still have guys who can put the ball in the net. You know, guys like Arfield, Defoe, these guys have played at the highest level. And when you are you know, giving them the ball in the positions that we did, you've got absolutely no chance. So although I can see your point overall in terms of, you know, possession, in terms of chances, etc., then perhaps 3-0 flatters Rangers. But in terms of us, you know, practically queuing up to give them gifts, 3-0 is possibly a good result for us, because it could have been more. We just seem to make error after error after error. I don't know whether there was, you know, a bit of stage fright would have been on the telly. I don't know whether all the rhetoric during the week about how we don't down tools, about how we continue going even although we've missed out in the top six, whether that was maybe a little bit misguided. I'm not sure what it was, but it was one of those days where we looked comfortable at times, we looked threatening at times, we looked like the side that we have kind of come to know since Hogmanay, and yet 2 seconds later, we would just do absolute schoolboy amateurish stuff, the kind of stuff that if you did on, you know, a Sunday league pitch, you would get absolutely torn to shreds, never mind in an SPL game. So that's the disappointing thing for me, because I think on a different day, if we had actually managed to get by without, you know, you can take the odd error. We're a young team, you're going to make the odd error, but to make as many kind of, you know, goal-costing errors that we did today, you have absolutely no chance. And I think if we'd managed to rule those out and had managed to get by without making those mistakes, then there was at least a draw there for us, because I don't think the actual quality, when it comes down to, you know, the quality on show, when we were doing things and were looking threatening, I thought we perhaps actually looked better than Rangers. Rangers won the game because we allowed them to win the game rather than being the better side.
And Buster, there's no getting away from the fact that there was more disappointing elements off the pitch as well. During the first half, James Tavernier was struck by a lighter. There was people spitting in James Tavernier, which hasn't been mentioned yet. And perhaps I'll get called all sorts for actually suggesting the fact that that actually happened, but it absolutely did. It happened before he got hit with a lighter as well. It had been happening at any time a Rangers player went over towards us. Our section at the towards the Rangers supporters, there was people spitting in his direction, which is just quite frankly disgusting. There was a pie thrown after all this happened. So how fucking stupid would you have to be when these incidents have already happened to then throw something else? I just can't get my head around it. We quite regularly talk up the contribution and the atmosphere generated by the guys in the end section. There's quite frankly no place for this in our support. There's other clubs that have had media attention, and rightfully so, for access stupidity. There's certain bits of it where perhaps people have got, believe there's a place for flares or flashbangs or anything else. But if you're throwing things at footballers on the pitch, if you're running onto the pitch, there's just clearly no place for it whatsoever. If you're spitting another human being, you're a scumbag. There's absolutely no getting away from that either. It's a pretty low point for our support, and something that perhaps the more experienced guys amongst that group are going to need to weed out the rats, or the club are going to need to look at the CCTV and ban these guys heavily for their actions today, because there's just no need for it. There's no place for it. And it's just disappointing to see.
Yeah, you're very much right. As you say, there definitely was a lighter thrown. There was definitely someone tried to spit in James Tavernier at that point as well. I've seen it.
Was more than one.
Well, I've only seen one, to be fair, but there was definitely, you know, a big slabber that zoomed past his shoulder. And then, as you say, somebody threw a pie at him as well. Now, again, maybe it was happening at other points in the game when the ball was down there as well. But as far as I can see, this came out because he was stealing 6-7 yards at a throw-in, which, you know, fans quite rightly, I suppose, I got a wee bit upset about it as well. You know, you got off your head, it's in the corner, move back, you prick, you know, things like that, fair enough. But as you say, it's gone too far there. As you mentioned as well, the older boys who essentially, you know, they started the group down in the corner there, the well boys, I don't think there was very many of them there, if any, because I know that quite a few of them are on a stag do actually this weekend. So, you know, they would quite rightly say it was nothing to do with their group, because there's quite a lot of younger faces kicking about down there. As you know, there's guys whose faces you usually know, names you know, guys you can talk to. I don't think I could say that about any of the young guys that were down there the day. As you said, it's something which the club needs to act on. Again, it was during the game. The cameras from the television would have been pointed right at that section, so these people should be easily identified. I know that maybe sounds easier than it probably is, because when you've got maybe what 300 people, you know, all sort of gesturing towards the player, it's going to be kind of difficult to see where certain things came from. Maybe not the pie, to be honest with you, but certainly maybe the lighter and things like that. It's, you know, the smaller items. So it's you know, it's no nice. It's no clever. I definitely think that there should be action taken, and as you says, that sort of behaviour doesn't. It's no fun at Fitba Park. Basically, if you're very much involved in, you know, things get overheated on the park, you know, you can see daft things there. But to be consciously making a decision to throw something at somebody, it's miles out, and as you say, spitting. I don't think I'd spit in my worst enemy. You know, it's absolute scumbag behaviour. So, MD, no matter who it is, what Fitba team, you know, these people need to be weeded out and, you know, as you say, given a lengthy ban.
Yeah, it's not a good one. And as I say, we don't know who the perpetrators of this were, and there's absolutely no point of. There has been a lot of finger pointing at a whole group of supporters. Let's get away from that shit as well, to be fair, because that is a couple of individuals that have let themselves down, they've let the club down, and the club will be rightfully punished for this. We've got to weed them out. There's absolutely no getting away from the fact of this. And Jay, I guess it's going to be. It's a difficult one, because I think you can take the higher ground when you see other clubs getting hammered for similar circumstances. It brings up the whole strict liability issue as well just now, doesn't it?
Well, that's it. That's actually the biggest kind of disappointment. You know, obviously, you know, taken as an isolated incident, anybody throwing anything at a football player is, as both of you said, an absolute scumbag. It serves absolutely no purpose whatsoever. What is it that you're actually achieving by chucking a lighter at James Tavernier? You know, there's literally, you know, you're not going to take what is the idea to kind of injure him to the point that he has to be taken off. I mean, it's absolutely pointless. But taking in the wider context, it's a big deal, because Scottish football at this moment in time is under attack. It's under attack for politicians. It's under attack from the police. It's under attack for the media. There is this kind of concerted effort to create this massive hysteria over the way that football fans behave. Now, I would argue that, you know, that the antics of the younger guys who are now congregating down that end section, you know, it has been on a kind of upwards curve in terms of what they're doing for a few seasons now. But we're at a situation where the OBFA was scrapped relatively recently, and anything and everything that is, you know, happening now has been used as ammunition for saying that the OBFA should never have been repealed in the first place. Perfect example of that is, you know, someone being stabbed in Merchant City, so not even anywhere near the game after the Old Firm game last week. And, you know, that was pounced upon. Suddenly, the OBFA being repealed had been, you know, went up like the bat signal into the clouds, and all these bigots and violent thugs and hooligans poured out of the woodwork, emboldened by the fact that the OBFA wasn't there anymore. And the same people peddling that, you know, didn't acknowledge the fact that, you know, Rangers and Celtic fans have been stabbed on Old Firm days throughout the last 5 or 6 years. Even a 10-year-old boy, you know, got bottled in the face. I think it was in 2015 when the OBFA was apparently, you know, had his living in this fantastic, you know, utopia where these things didn't happen. So there is an actual agenda now. There is an agenda on the behalf of politicians, on behalf of the police and the wider public, because the wider public are lapping this stuff up. The people who don't go to football are seeing the headlines. They're hearing what the politicians are saying. They're hearing what the police are saying, and they're believing it. So Scottish football is under attack at the moment, and there's this narrative that it's, you know, the worst hooliganism that we've ever seen, that suddenly it's not safe to go to football matches. You know, again, going back to that Old Firm game, it was apparently this shame game. There were 6 arrests at the game. I'm not going to get into all the, you know, you can read anywhere all the, you know, the comparisons between that and Transmit Festival or gigs at Hampden. You know, it's minuscule in comparison, and yet we don't apply the same arguments or the same treatment of music fans or concert goers as we do football fans. So every football fan is a part of this at the moment. You know, we don't go to games to cause trouble, but we will and have in the past encountered heavy-handed police and police who are out to kind of target us just purely because we're football fans. And that's only going to increase now because we're in a situation where there is an increase in behavioural problems, because I think what's happened is, you know, Scottish football was relatively mundane when it came to atmosphere. And then you had the likes of the Green Brigade popping up. You had the Motherwell Boys popping up. You know, there was ultra groups at the likes of St Mirren, St Johnson. And it was all very, you know, colourful. And it was about creating an atmosphere. And it was almost outdoing each other in terms of who can create the best atmosphere, who can be the sort of the best ultras group. And it kind of feels that, you know, those generation, if you like, of guys involved in those groups have kind of grown up, drifted away from it. And there seems to be a younger generation where it's a little bit more sinister. It's no longer about, you know, creating the best atmosphere. It's about, you know, I suppose the kind of the, you would perhaps still call it harmless, but the idea of stealing, you know, breaking into Fir Park and stealing flags and stealing banners, right up to, you know, battling in the streets. Or I say battling, you know, we're not in the 80s, you know, the pavement dancing for each side of the road, that kind of thing. And it does seem to be, you know, in an upwards curve. Now, I don't link that to the OBFA at all. I think the OBFA was a piece of shit. It had absolutely no impact on sectarianism in Scotland. And what is currently happening is not directly linked to that being repealed. It is just what has naturally happened over the next few years. But the problem is we're now in an environment, we're now in an atmosphere in Scotland where Scottish football is now the scapegoat for society's ills. We have, you know, a country that allows certain marches and certain things, you know, to encourage sectarianism because it just focuses it on football. Apparently sectarianism is a football issue and nothing else. You know, football fans can't behave themselves. Football fans are thugs. Football fans are hooligans. So there's a lot of people within the game trying to combat that. You know, Graham McGarry wrote a fantastic article during the week touching really upon that. Even today, I noticed in the match day programme, there was an article at the back of the programme saying, you know, let's calm it down. There is no need for this hysteria. There is no need to scapegoat football or football fans. You're making, yes, there are issues, but you're making a mountain out of a molehill. So to be given, you know, when you're trying to battle against that narrative, and then you have some wee asshole chucking a lighter and I tell, you know, all right, the fact that it's televised shouldn't matter, but it does because it's broadcast across, you know, the country. When someone does that, they are undoing everything. You know, everything that Graham McGarry has put in that article is practically undone in the eyes of the wider public as soon as a wee absolute scumbag chucks a lighter at James Tavernier. And that's the problem. It's all very well kind of saying, oh, well, you know, it's only an individual. Oh, well, you know, we're not going to grass on him if we know who it is. But this can have serious implications for everybody as a football fan because, you know, there are politicians just waiting for excuses to bring in strict liability, for example. Now, if strict liability existed, there is a good chance that for the next home game, that entire end section would be closed and Motherwell could possibly be fined, you know, 30, 40 grand. Motherwell can't afford, you know, 30, 40 grand. 30, 40 grand is, you know, potentially a new signing, you know, a year's salary for potential a young player. You know, let's not kid ourselves here. Somebody chucking a lighter on today could actually have serious implications, not only if strict liability existed, but it might do now because it's just adding to fuel to the fire. It's adding, you know, weight to the case that says strict liability should be brought in. Now, I'm not going to have a debate about whether strict liability would work or not. That's, you know, not what we're talking about. But if it does come in, then Motherwell will be held responsible for things like what happened today. So if the wee assholes who are there consider themselves genuinely Motherwell fans and their mates who are around them, who know who they are, consider themselves as genuine Motherwell fans, then their priority should be Motherwell Football Club. And that means weeding, as you said, weeding the rats out, you know, getting these wee guys out, because we are all going to suffer if this continues, both as football fans who want to travel to games and experience games without being treated like a scumbag by the police, and also in terms of our club having finances, you know, points deductions, sections of the ground being closed, should strict liability come in. So that's the issue, and I think that's why what people are starting to realise now, because in the past, I think it would have been, you know, whitewashed a little bit. Oh, well, you know, every team has its arseholes. Ack, it was just one wee guy. But we need to actually start looking at it in, you know, the real life, you know, real world, what's actually happening at the moment. Scottish football has been scapegoated by, you know, for a lot of things that are wrong in Scottish society. And we guys doing, you know, the antics that we saw today is going to cost us all. So absolutely, I would like to see, you know, from a Welsh Society board point of view, I would absolutely like to, you know, see us working with the club to dish out bans to folk like that. Because it's one thing, you know, as you said, it's one thing to have flares and flashbangs and we can debate, you know, the rights and wrongs and health and safety and all that kind of thing. It's one thing to, you know, stand up in a stadium you're meant to be seated. You know, I like to stand at games, create an atmosphere, all that kind of thing. You know, there is that. And then there is what is essentially, you know, attempting to assault somebody, throwing an actual object onto a field of play that is not just going to potentially injure that player, but is actually going to screw up what we all want to see, which is a, you know, a successful Motherwell team, you know, a ground that you can go and stand wherever you want, and not to be treated like a second-class citizen when you go to games. So, yeah, absolutely agree. I think the club should be doing all it can to identify who it was. And see, to be honest, ban them for life. That's how serious we're talking about now. I would ban them for life, because I remember, you know, maybe 10, 15 years ago, all over the old Steelman Online, somebody chucked a Bovril, you know, cup at the ground and was banned for about 6 months. You know, they chucked it on the ground in frustration. I think it bounced up and hit a linesman's shin, and they were banned for about 6 months. We are now in a situation where if we want to safeguard our club from the likes of strict liability, and we want to safeguard the fans who want to create an atmosphere and want to travel to games and perhaps can be a wee bit boisterous but are not acting illegal, if we want to safeguard them from future heavy-handedness from the police, then we need to treat incidents like this properly, and we need to grass them up regardless of how, oh, don't be a grass. They need to be grassed up, they need to be weeded out, and they need to be banned. And if possible, they need to be taken through the courts, because it's unacceptable and it's going to damage not just Scottish football, it's going to damage Motherwell, and it's going to damage our experience as football fans.
Well, that's it as well. You know, we could be sitting here one day talking about how we were unable to watch the game just because of incidents like that.
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing. Like, strict liability is something that you could debate all day. You know, strict liability, if you just copy it from UEFA, for example, would absolutely destroy a team like Motherwell in the current climate. It's as simple as that. If the plan was to, you know, write a strict liability from scratch and it was purely about, you know, 10,000 people singing a sectarian song, that's one thing. But if you just copy the strict liability that's in place at the likes of UEFA, then you're going to be talking about guys running on the park. You're going to be talking about, you know, certain flags. You're going to be talking about guys throwing things onto a park. We will end up bankrupt. We're a fan-owned club. Things are going well, but we don't have somebody to just put their hand in their pocket and cover, you know, five-digit fines because some wee arsehole chucked a lighter at James Tavernier. If the politicians get their way and strict liability comes in and it is rushed in the same way the OBFA was, then fans will suffer and our club will suffer massively. This isn't a joke. You know, anybody who is Motherwell Football Club at heart and wants to see the best for Motherwell Football Club should be getting rid of wee arseholes like we saw today.
No, that is absolutely the point, and we do need to kind of differentiate between a fans group that have done so much for the club and also just fucking idiots, and that is basically where the line has to be drawn. Moving it on to a more positive note, the Fir Park Sleep Out has almost raised £2,000 for Shelter Scotland, the Motherwell FC Community Trust and the Motherwell FC Disabled Supporters Association. A fantastic night, a very worthwhile night, something that I think we're all very proud of and would like to thank everyone that has contributed to that. Guys, I don't think there's much else that we've got. I know it has been a couple of weeks since we last recorded, but I think that's us pretty much there.
Cheers, and when you share this, I would like to see it with a hashtag, weed out the rats.
Well, thanks very much, guys. See you later.
I didn't think it was going to be repeated after I said it, but to be fair, it stuck.
No, it's quote of the podcast.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back. In fact, we're going to take another week off after this week, and then we'll be back after the Hamilton game at the end of April. Until then, thank you and goodbye. Thank you.